Welcome to the Creative Vets Podcast, and I'm joined today by Hannah and Brett. How you guys doing?
Hey, so good.
Fantastic.
Sweet. So who is on today's episode, Hannah?
Today, we got to talk with Luke Pell. If you guys don't know, Luke was on The Bachelor. He's also an Army veteran and a graduate of West Point. And he's lived in Nashville now for about a decade, and he's done some awesome work with Creative Vets. So it was great to chat with him today.
And he's super dreamy. Have you seen him?
Richard said it.
When I first met him, I was just like, man, can't believe they build him like this, like in real life. I was like, and what was great was he's just so cool and awesome and like everything. Because when I first, my friend was like, hey, my friend from, you know, he is Army and he wants to help, but he's from The Bachelor. I was instantly like, ugh, like, what's his personality going to be like? I thought it may be very fake, and ends up he was legitimately one of the best down to earth people I've ever met. After we became friends, he would sit there. He would talk to everybody. This was in the height of it, and you probably remember.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah, you were hanging out. Girls would just come up to him, and girls that you would think that he may even blow off, come up to him, and he'd stop everything and not just say, hey, how are you? He'd say, where are you from? Like, are you going to school? Like, what are you studying? And I'm like, I need to take notes from this guy because it's like, I don't know.
Well, we legit could not go out to dinner with him without him having to take like 10 pictures with people.
Yeah, but you know how I knew he was like a really good guy is he invited me to like some East Nashville thing, and it was with all the other people on his – there's like 7 other people on his season at another – I forget what bar it was. And we were hanging out, and then people just started coming and swarming the whole group and just doing this because this, again, is the height of it. And I said, you know what? I was like, I'm going to bounce. So I'm going to go over to Whiskey Row for a little bit if you want, you know, come on after. He's like, yeah, I'll be there. And I was like, okay. But I got there. 15 minutes later, he rolls in the door, and there's nobody there, and we just chill and hang out. I'm like, okay, I like this guy.
Cool. Yeah.
Quick correction. He was on season 12 of The Bachelorette.
Yeah, I always say
The Bachelorette.
Oh, I know. See, I'm not in that world enough.
You don't watch it?
No, I've never seen an episode. I mean, I did. Once he went back onto it, I watched an episode of that Winter Games, and I was just like, I can't do this. I mean, some people are into that. They're just like, I love this stuff. Are you?
No, I've never watched an episode.
Okay, good.
I didn't want to admit it.
Are you, Brett? Are you closet Bachelor fan? Awesome. Anything else you want to say about this episode before we jump into it?
Yeah. No, I thought this was a great conversation. We chat about Luke's time at West Point, his time in deployment, how he got into music and how he moved to Nashville, and some really good just nuggets of truth. He dropped some bombs about workarounds and doing the deep dive and just living your life the way you think you should live it, not waiting around for it. So I thought that was great.
Well, I'm excited to listen to it again. You know, with a brain injury, this is the best thing, is because I get to learn all over again.
Let's get into it. Got a face for radio.
Oh, that's a great intro, Luke. He just clicked it, so we're recording.
Oh, we're on.
That's our intro now.
Welcome.
So, Luke.
The guy with the best face for radio I've ever seen. Do I not get any headphones or anything?
No, why do you need headphones? Dadgummit. Why do you need headphones?
Because I like to hear myself talk.
We can give you headphones if you want.
They're not plugged in.
Make you feel better.
Okay.
Sweet. So we're here with Luke Pell, who's become a good friend of mine. How long have I known you?
At least half a decade.
Yep. I think it's probably been 4 years, right?
I would say five, my friend.
I think I moved here 5 years ago.
Yeah, I met you the day you moved here. Remember? You were begging for pocket change down at 7-Eleven, and I gave you a dollar.
Really, we met at a dinner. I actually think I met you right before the dinner. I think randomly, a friend of mine, Cassidy,
that's true.
When we went to Tin Roof.
That's
you were
true.
With one of her friends, Jacob Powell, I think.
Yeah.
Songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I briefly mentioned you guys. That was the first time I ever heard about you and that show and everything. And
no,
I hadn't been
on the show yet, dude.
Oh, really?
We were just homies. It was because I was a veteran.
Okay.
And that's the only reason. She was like, whoever introduced us, who was it?
Cassidy.
Cassidy, yeah. I think she was like, hey, he's a veteran also.
Okay.
He's a veteran songwriting. So we met. And
it
then,
was just brief.
And yeah, it was just like, hi, how you doing? Good to meet you. What up, bro? Nice tattoo, homie.
Yeah,
go.
We did a lot of grunts.
Like a bunch of like caveman army stuff. And then it was probably another month or something went by. And then we were at that Dinner for Dreamers.
Yeah. And I stood up and gave my like 3-minute, 2-minute pitch.
Yeah.
And then you just sparks flew, emotions ran high. You approached me afterwards.
I mean, I got tears in my eyes, and here we are. Then that was really where I got to know your story, obviously. So you told the whole room, and we had that dinner there. And then you told me about starting Creative Vets. And it was like super, you had just, I mean, it was like you told me about the idea, you had it on the plane, you had a conversation with, I guess, you met Linda on a plane?
No, no, that was, that was a different, you're merging two stories.
Oh yeah, who was the other person?
No,
who did you meet on the plane?
John, it was our old chairman. Like,
that's
we
right.
met a guy, he was the chairman at the time that I met you.
That's right.
But what I loved about when I first met you is that you approach me. Like, typically uh-huh. it's me approaching writers or, you know, I go out to writers' rounds every single night when I first moved here, and I would go to him and be like, hey, would you want to write with a veteran? But after I told my story, you came up to me and you're like, hey, I'm a singer, songwriter, I'm a veteran. I feel like this is a perfect
brand
partnership, relationship. Like,
sign
I just
me
wanna,
up.
Anything you need, I'm here for you. So
for sure.
I was like, well, dang, that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I enjoyed that. But so you were in the Army, right? And what years were you in the Army?
I went to West Point in 2003, graduated in 07, and then I have a 5-year commitment after that, and I was in from 07 to 12 on active duty, and then got out as a captain in 2012. So, but I tell people I was more so in the military during my time at West Point than I was when I was actually in the military. You got to wake up every morning, make your bed. You know, it was like super regimented life up there. But yeah, it was so 9 years total, and some of the best years of my life. And it's just hard to believe that was almost a decade of my life was spent, you know, in the military, putting on a uniform every day. But met some of the greatest Americans I've ever run across, and just I really felt fulfilled. And you feel this purpose, and you go through this experience of self-discovery and just learning who you are and what the world is all about and what it means to you to be an American and those type of things. And so I was super appreciative of that experience for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you just didn't join for the college?
Yeah. I went, well, that's a whole nother story. Yeah. No.
But did you play music before or after, or how did music fit in?
Yeah.
Were you playing there?
So the music connection for me, you know, I had learned how to play piano from
I didn't know you played piano.
The pastor at our church when I was like 10 years old. I took piano lessons for 3 or 4 years from him. And so that was kind of the beginning of, you know, learning the fundamentals of music and realized that I really loved it and resonated with it. And then, like a lot of kids do, I got really heavy into sports and everything during high school. I kind of stopped playing piano there for a little bit and wasn't digging in as much. And then once I got to college, though, I was super... restricted at West Point as far as, you know, what possessions we could have with us, what our downtime, what we could do, where we could go. So I had a guitar and I could keep that under my bed in my dorm room at West Point. And so me and a buddy of mine, we just kind of started teaching ourselves just on YouTube videos and whatnot. And I had background in music from just the piano thing, so I understood the basis of it, but I just hadn't done it on a guitar. So we figured it out freshman year, and we would just play cover songs and stuff in the dorm rooms when we had a little bit of downtime. And it was just kind of our getaway. You know, he was from Texas too, and it was just kind of saying it reminded us of home, you know, just playing music and playing these, you know, 90s country songs that we grew up loving. And it was just a time to get away from the stress of just being at West Point and being in the military and all those things. So.
Especially in those first few years, because I know like academies are pretty like, was it called plebe?
Yeah,
is that Navy?
No, that's at West Point, they call you a plebe. Is like the.
So I heard it's pretty. Most people don't know that, like, because they think West Point and the academy and all that stuff. They're like, oh, it's just a military college.
Yeah,
but like your freshman year, you're on like lockdown, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the biggest difference? Isn't there? Because that even I was in the Marine Corps, then I left the Marine Corps, and it wasn't until like 7 years later that I found out that. You know, West Points and the academy were like that way. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, that's boot camp. You're in boot camp.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, so a lot of people don't realize that. So there's boot camp or basic training for all the services. And usually that's an 8 to 12 week process. And then even though you might be a private or an E1, there's a word for us to look up later. What's an E1? if you're, you know, you're just a private in the military at that point, and you go out and, you know, you just do your job and you go to your dorm room and you just kind of live a life, and you're doing training cycles and it's 9 to 5 and you're in the military. But the thing is that the academies is even throughout your freshman year, you're going to class, But it's almost like you're still in basic training throughout the entire freshman year of going to college, which, you know, is there's plus and minuses. I think it was good for me because I had structure. There was no, like, I had friends that were other schools that were partying and, like, probably skipping class, you know, and just being lazy. And, like, we can't skip one class. You can't be late to class. You can't do anything.
What happens?
Like, yeah, you're what they call doing hours is like how they punish you. And so that means on Saturdays and Sundays, you have to put on full dress uniform, get your parade rifle, your parade sword, if you're an upperclassman, and you go out in the area, which is just a huge parking lot area in between all the barracks. It's a huge square, and they just put you in formation, and you just march around. And however many hours you have, you just march in a circle, in a square all day.
That's like the same for Belmont, right?
Yeah.
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 So you can.
Last time I had to skip class, I had to march around the square.
So you can only do 8 hours in a day, right? So I think that's all they could do. And so you might get 8 hours for being late to one class. So that means all day Saturday, you got to wake up 8 a.m., be out there, and you march for 8 hours in a circle.
Was it up to the teacher of the class, or who was it up to, like the actual hours of punishment?
Yeah, so the teacher just reported back to your, what they call tactical officer of your cadet company, whoever kind of manages your cadet unit or whatever, and they implement, enforce the rules. So then they're like, oh, looks like you got hours on Saturday, bud. All right. Let's be sure you got that belt buckle shined up, eh? So, but of course, I wasn't a football player, so the hours would get deferred until you're in off season, or you would have to do like a study hall thing instead of the marching deal.
What was the curriculum like? Is it just normal general education college curriculum, or what kind of majors do you get to choose at West Point?
Yeah, so, you know, West Point started out as an engineering school, kind of like Texas A&M, where it was like heavy engineering and really only engineering. But over the years, through the 80s and 90s, they began offering a full liberal arts, you know, spectrum of majors that you could select. So they didn't have everything, obviously. Like when I was there, they didn't have like a real estate. You couldn't get into real estate, or say, I want to be a petroleum engineer and go into the oil business straight out of West Point. But everyone has to still, and it's that way now, you have to have at least a minor worth of credits in some engineering degree, and then you can pick a liberal arts if you want to be a history major or a psychology major or whatever.
Cool. What did you choose? That.
So I was a sociology major.
Cool.
And then I had systems engineering was my minor. So I picked whatever I could pass with. That was the goal.
Was your mindset music? Did you know? Because yeah. When was it? Was it in that moment, like that during West Point is when you figure out music? Was it going to be a thing, or was it actually after you went out into the actual military, into the army world, and you were like, hey, you know what? Maybe I won't make this a full career and I'll turn to music. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, it's funny when that kind of that transition began to happen. I mean, back to music. So I began to play guitar and play cover songs and stuff all the way through my years at West Point. And then my senior year is when you get to select based off of your class rank. So, you know, the valedictorian will say where they want to go and what they want to do. They say, I want to be a helicopter pilot and I want to go to Vincenza, Italy as my first duty station, or Hawaii or whatever, right? So the top kids in the class, they get to pick the coolest jobs and then go where the coolest places are. So me, they're like, well, you can go to Louisiana and be a chemical officer in the swamp, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
we got this position in Alaska for you.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, by the time I got to my class pick, it was a lot of, you know, just basic U.S. places. I could have gone back
to
home
the hats,
to
like
Fort Hood. What's that?
I'm thinking the NBA draft.
They have baseball hats. I'll pick Port Polk, Louisiana, home of the Chem Corps. So I had Fort Campbell popped up on my radar. And I looked in Colorado. There's a base out there, big Army base in Colorado Springs. And then Fort Hood is back in near Austin, Texas, and I thought about going there. But then I saw Fort Campbell was available, which is right here outside of Nashville. And so I knew that it was close to Nashville. I was like, man, you know, if I can get close to Nashville, I can go down to Nashville every night after work and on the weekends and kind of just, you know, learn about songwriting and the music industry and see what's there, you know? And so that's why I picked Fort Campbell. And then I was able to come here and be my first duty station. And of course, when I, like 6 weeks after I got here, I went straight to Afghanistan. So I was like, well, that really worked out good for me. So I spent a year in Afghanistan, but that worked out really well as well because I had my girlfriend at the time ship me a guitar. I bought a guitar here. And so once I got an address in Afghanistan, she mailed it to me. And so I had that show up over there about a month once after I got there. And the guy that was kind of my military, for those of you who aren't in the military, he was my platoon sergeant, which is basically a guy that's been in 15 to 17 years usually. And they're an enlisted, a non-commissioned officer, an NCO, and their job, the way the Army is designed, is there's always an enlisted soldier that will basically mentor a younger officer or an officer, and they also, the NCO, will then implement the enforcement of the rules and very much be what they call the platoon daddy, or take care of the soldiers directly. And then the officer is more about the strategy and the planning and talking to other organizations within the military about, hey, where is your platoon going next? And he's kind of the representative to speak for the platoon. So my platoon sergeant was this guy from West Virginia. His name was Jimmy Sanders, and he was a sergeant first class. And coincidentally, this guy could play guitar like Brad Paisley. I mean, wow. Like, could like play any guitar solo in the world. He's from West Virginia and been playing since he was like 3 years old. And so we were roommates and everything on this small little forward operating base in Afghanistan. And so it's out of the 30 people on the entire base out there, me and my platoon and my roommate's Jimmy Sanders, and he can just shred on guitar and loves country music as much as I do. I'm sorry.
You're so important.
Golly, I got phones blowing up here.
We got the most important
believe
person.
Me, it's just a spam call. Don't worry. Nothing important is getting called. Anyway, so I got to learn from him, you know, and I wish I could have just had a flash drive, a thumb drive, and just picked up all the knowledge he had. But like, he was so good, I could never be as good as he was. But we got to sit there and just play guitar, you know, on our downtime in Afghanistan, and I learned a lot from him, and that was just really cool for me. And it just kept that music piece and that getaway, what it was for me at West Point, it kept it going, you know, just one more stage, and I was still, you know, I loved it, and it was my therapy, you know. And so after that year in Afghanistan, I came back to Nashville. I was here for about a year, Fort Campbell still. And that's when I started, you know, coming to the Bluebird Cafe and watching songwriters and trying to learn, you know, the whole business and learn the art of songwriting, because I realized there was a lot to it, right? It wasn't just something you could just learn overnight. And
well, nowadays you have to be – you can't just be an artist. Like in Nashville, it used to be you could come here in the 90s and just be an artist, not a writer.
Sure.
But now, knowing how the system works here, you're like, I got to be an artist and a writer. They want you to be the full package.
Yeah, very much so. That's kind of how you earn your stripes, I think, in Nashville is somehow climbing the ladder and playing the politics of being a songwriter and a successful songwriter, which, you know, just like any other industry, it's not just about raw talent necessarily. It's about, you know, how do you find a way to find the right people to surround yourself and get the best product that is going to be seen and heard by the rest of the world. And that's what a lot of these guys come here and they'll spend a decade just working up and down Music Row and meeting and shaking hands with people. It's its own animal is to figure out how to be not just able to write good songs, but to be a successful songwriter in Nashville. It's a tall mountain to climb. But anyway, I was learning all that, still in the military, so it was very hard to, you know, fully plug in, because I was just coming down here on my downtime, and then it was just not the same. And then eventually, a year later, I went to the Army moved me to El Paso, Texas, and so that was my last 2 years in the Army. Needless to say, my last 2 years in the Army, I was like, you gonna send me to El Paso, Texas? I'm out.
You must have really been low on this ranking list.
And for that reason, I'm out. Thank you. Anyway, my ranking from school came back and got me, haunt me. Yeah, it's like, actually, you've gone lower since you graduated. How about El Paso? So my last 2 years were there, and then I got out of the military, and of course, I was trying to figure out what to do. I didn't have a direct path back to success in music. So, you know, I went into the corporate world, and I went to work for an oil company in Oklahoma City. And, you know, even in Oklahoma City, like I had a garage, and that's where I'd put a PA system, and my roommate played drums, and we would just try to, you know, playing music whenever we could, you know. And it was funny because I thought that I was trying to work my way back to Nashville, and I did eventually, but I think there was something that I learned in that process is like, I probably could have ripped the Band-Aid off a lot earlier and just came back and figured it out in Nashville sooner than I did. But I was like, oh, well, I need to save up some money. I need to go, you know, I'm not ready yet, you know. And I think that was the big learning lesson. And for me, that's been that way in a lot of things in life is you're never going to be ready to step off and do something. And so, you know, if, you know, for veterans that may be hearing this podcast today that are wondering about, you know, coming to a Creative Vets program or wondering about trying to be a songwriter or learning guitar, like, yeah, you're never going to feel ready to just get on a plane and go to Nashville. You just got to just do it, you know, book the trip, send the email, ask the hard question and say, hey, can I be involved? Can I come there? Can I learn from you? And just, and, you know, stick your neck out there and you'll be surprised at the results that come from that, you know? And so that's been my big learning lesson is just take that first step and move forward and move quickly because life is short, you know, and 10 years will go by just like that. So, but, you know, I'm here and I think everything happens for a reason and I've loved my time here in Nashville so far and continue to love it and continue to learn every day. And my time in the military was all a part of that process, you know. So
I think going off that last note about songwriters, I don't think people understand how accessible songwriters are when they come to Nashville.
Sure.
Because for those people who are listening who are like, oh, I just want to be a songwriter, but I can never make it in Nashville. It's kind of like actors in LA, that's one thing, like trying to move out there. But
sure.
But Nashville is the biggest, smallest city ever, and the music community is so tight that the moment you move here and you start going to these writers' rounds, all of a sudden you're just connected with so many songwriters. To just be able to go up there and make that leap is so important. Did you have your – I know for me, when I first moved to town, I mean, I was like Monday Whiskey Jam, Tuesday Tin Roof Revival, Wednesday Blue Bar, Freak Show. Like, I went out to every single writers' round. How strategic were you in your growth, or were you successful in just meeting someone right off the bat? Because networking is key here, too.
Networking is huge. Probably I would say networking might be the most important part of being a successful songwriter in Nashville is networking.
Yeah, you can be the best in the
and
world.
Good
you
at
come
it.
Here and not network and then you're still not going to make it.
Right. You have to be self-aware and you have to be just relentlessly a networker. And so that's the guys that have had the most success here. Now, sure, there's anomalies to that and people that have found it other ways or they've just been some prodigy or whatever. They just happen to bump into, you know, the right person at the right time that just took them straight to the top. But for a lot of people, it's just this 10-year grind of just networking and learning about themselves and the people that are around them and maybe also growing up with kind of a class or a generation of songwriters that are peers of theirs. And they all kind of start connecting the dots and find a way to make the town work for them, I guess. And I've seen that recipe kind of work. But yeah, for me, I mean, I think that's very much of an Enneagram thing for you of saying, you know, Monday night's Whiskey Jam, Tuesday night, this Friday's night, you know, Wednesday night at the Commodore, whatever. I guess I was very much that way when I first got here because I think that's a military thing probably for us too. It's a structural thing. We like, hey, we just needed to get a schedule and just grind it out. And I was very much that way, just going out and just trying to make these events, be, you know, rub shoulders with the right people and meet people. I will tell you one thing that I wasn't good at, and guys that are veterans that are just coming out of the military, if you hear this, I'm sure you'll understand, is when I got out of the military, my not emotional intelligence, but my ability to reach out and be social and talk to people. And it wasn't that I didn't have a PTSD issue with that. Wasn't scarred necessarily from the military and like talking to people, but, the military culture, you learn to not talk unless you're spoken to basically, you know, and it's like, oh, I don't know. You're always looking at people's chest, which is like where their rank is in the Army at least. And it's like, well, is he a colonel? Is he a general? Is he a, you know, what is he? And I shouldn't say anything unless he kind of talks to me. And when I do talk to him, I'm going to say what's needed. So like you're kind of like chit chat back porch, gear is lost a little bit, you know, and it was for me, I had to try to really work hard to get back at just elevator talk, you know, just shaking somebody's hand and be like, man, how you doing? Where are you from? That's cool. Oh, I like that Iowa Hawkeyes t-shirt. You from Iowa? You know, just learning how to re-engage with people and talk to strangers again and be very much connected and relational of how I spoke to them, you know, because I was just still in that military kind of mind frame. And that was a process. It took years of doing that. And sometimes I'm still not that way. I kind of get introverted in times and I won't reach out and talk to somebody. And I may have been sitting next to or standing next to a record label executive that was like, you might be like, come see us next Wednesday. Let's chat. You know, you just never know who you're going to run into in Nashville. And so you need to take every opportunity to talk to somebody and stick your hand out and shake hands with them and be inquisitive about who they are and what they do and why they're here and be willing to learn and be humble about it at the same time. You know, I think some people come here from other markets. You know, they might come here from Oklahoma City or Kansas City or someplace in middle America that's not Nashville, and they know that they have a talent to sing or maybe a talent to play guitar. They have some talent, right, that they were applauded for back in, you know, by their friends and family back home. And they get to here to Nashville, and that you got to be humble yourself, right? Because you're
not the best.
Everybody
anymore.
Around you, every bartender, every Lyft driver. I mean, your Lyft driver will probably play you under the table on a guitar, right? Because everybody here is here for music, and they're all professionals, and they've all worked very hard to get where they're at, and they're probably picking up extra money driving a Lyft or being a Uber driver or being a bartender to make ends meet, because music industry's hard. It's tough. But it is cool to be surrounded by that and the competitive nature of that, and you can know that all these people are here, a majority of them are here doing the same thing that you are. You know, if you're coming here to be a songwriter and just meet and learn and soak it all up. So
yeah, and if you can't be a connector, just have a friend that's a connector.
Because
that's how most people think. I'm very, like, I can go talk to anybody, and I can't.
Yes.
I always had to have, like, I had Chad and Kevin and other people of my friend group that would actually go up to people. But if I'm in a room and it's even, like, say it was every publisher in town, I actually would never walk up to any of them and say anything, because I can't. There's something in me that's like, I can't go ask for something. And I think that's another military thing, too, where you're actually asking for something when you're going to engage with these people.
Right.
And so there's still, like, this thing in my head that I can't get out of. So I've always needed someone to be like, hey, this is my friend Richard. Then once I have you, I could just, you know, own it. But I can't actually just walk up to people. So I just surrounded myself, like you said, with good people, people who knew what my mission was and what I was trying to do.
Right.
And they kind of bring people to me. So that was a big help, because that was something I was also kind of afraid of when I was
Well, there's a lot to be said about that statement. And surrounding yourself with people that compliment you. You know what I mean? Because I think another thing that a lot of military guys do, I did this, is you start taking on the pressure of maybe your constraints or what's holding you back or what you're not good at. You take on the pressure of that on your own shoulders. And so you start feeling this immense pressure and be like, I'm not good at connecting, or I'm not good at this or whatever. And it starts putting you in a place where you kind of want to shut down and you kind of want to just go, like, mope around and be sad about it and say, oh, I'm just not good at this or whatever. But really what you just said, Richard, is find somebody who is in your peer group or who has that talent or that skill that you don't have. Surround yourself with them and work in a partnership, because believe me, you have something that they need as well. And if y'all can, you know, find those people that complement each other, you're better as a team. We're all better as a team.
I'm glad you said that, because it just reminded me, like, a lot of this is about workarounds, because most people, like you said, they instantly think, oh, well, I've never done this before. I don't think I can do this. I'm not going to do it. But even when we taught a course at Virginia Commonwealth University, and then once I was done with that, someone reached out to me and said, hey, will you be the keynote speaker for this UPSIA conference? There's going to be, like, you know, 100 different schools here, and you'd speak for an hour. And so I was still at that time kind of struggling with anticipation anxiety and getting up in front of people. I hadn't talked to myself, or I haven't talked about myself or Creative Vets for more than probably 10 minutes, like, to this point.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking, well, this could be an opportunity to get a bunch more schools on board of what Kravitz is doing. I'll do it. And at this time, too, and still now today, I have a brain injury, so I can't remember. I can't memorize things. So I committed to an hour-long speech where, one, I've never spoke before. I'm the keynote for this conference, and I can't memorize anything. I know that if I try to memorize something, because if I really worked for a really long time, I could, but then my anxieties will take over when I actually go, even if I had everything memorized. I just know myself. Yep. So I said, well, I'm good at telling stories, and I know the history of Creative is better than anybody, and the history of my life better than anybody. I'm just going to do photos. I'll just put up photos of, you know, my high school because I want to talk about the like 9/11 happening and my transition. And then I'll put up a photo of me in Iraq, and then I'll talk about my Iraq experience. Then I'll put a photo of me at Camp David talking about. And so I just kept going. And so the first talk I ever gave, it ended up being like an hour and 10 minutes. And the CEO of that company was like, "This is the best speech ever. We want you back for our national conference."
Yeah.
But like they booked me like a year and a half out.
Yeah.
But if I would have just said no, because I'm like, well, I can't speak in front of people. I've never done that before. I can't memorize stuff. I guess I'll never be able to do this.
Sure.
I don't think that way. I just think, oh, I could just do it a different way that's maybe not been done before, but it works for me. So I'm glad you brought that up because I think every veteran needs to hear that.
Absolutely.
It's just there's too many I can't. So I can't go to school or I can't be a singer. I can't be a songwriter. Right. I can't go this way. So
isn't that kind of the military mindset too? Like you just find a way.
And I think that is when we leave the military, I don't think it's kind of like what we talk about, the two brains, like your big brain, your little brain, the forefront of your brain, the subconscious. I think once we come home, we're still kind of military, but we're not thinking like when we see a mountain or when we see a hill and we have to take that hill, we don't need instructions on how to do it. We just do it. If there's an obstacle in our way, we figure out how to go around it.
You also don't have somebody telling you what to do.
Yeah.
You have to make those decisions yourself.
Yeah. Sure. So if they took that, and that's a good point, because if the military did the same thing, like veterans coming home, if I said, go be a songwriter, they're going to do that. But if I say, can you be a songwriter, they're going to be like, no.
Yeah.
So I think it's that kind of thing too, where it's probably good that we're actually instructing them, just be like, hey, go do this if you want to do it. Because if you just think about the end point, don't worry about the track that you get there, just as long as you get there.
Right.
So, Luke, when you were in the military, you had music the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Was that always something that you saw as your future post-military? Is that something that you always wanted to work towards?
Yeah, I think that for it to be professional, on a professional level of doing music, I don't think that was something I thought about until, I guess I was curious about it when I graduated college, and I knew that I had the next 5 years I was going to be in the military anyway. And I knew that there was no really way that I could do it professionally while I was in. So I knew I had 5 years to kind of work on it, think about it, whatever. And so that was always my intention of during those 5 years, is to try to learn, try to write, try to, you know, just achieve some type of growth during that time, and then hope that when the 5 years was over, then, you know, maybe I would feel prepared to go ahead and try it. Now, I think that was where, after that 5 years was over, I kind of came out of the military with, I was so happy to be out, and I was just ready. I had a lot of there's a lot of these headhunters that come and recruit young military officers. Before you get out. Before you get out, they're like, hey, you know, we can get you this money over here, this money over there. And so I saw that and was like, more money than I ever, you know, almost actually double the money that I was making in the military as a captain. I was going to go make the next day at an oil company. And for me, I was like, well, I'd be an idiot if I don't go do that, you know? And so I started down that path instead of just working back to Nashville. And, you know, I guess maybe the verdict's still out on that a little bit, but at the end of the day, I feel like I would have rather come back to Nashville sooner, because I didn't realize that once I got to Nashville, then your clock starts. You know, then you have ten years to deal with, and I didn't know that then. I was like, oh, I can prepare, and then before I go to Nashville, then I'll just roll in. I'll save some money for what I need to spend it on as far as get my music career going and everything, and I really just needed to start my clock sooner in Nashville, you know, to buy myself that time. So it's an interesting strategy out there. You're kind of weighing your options. What do? Do I take the safe route? Do I try to save some money? Do I just jump off in the deep end? And I think, you know, for this, really for anything, I think that the advice that I give to people is really jump off in the deep end, you know, safe in terms of a career. And this is something that Gary Vee or a lot of these career coaches will tell you, is like, you know, don't sit on your hands. There's not time to sit on your hands. Like, if it's a career thing that you're doing, move forward now, tomorrow, do it, you know, because that so many people are complacent and just kind of apprehensive and about, oh, I'm not ready, you know, and you got to go now. So, yeah.
Like right now?
Like right now,
the,
like
wait, I, don't, listen to the rest of the podcast. Then go.
How did you get into songwriting? Like, were you starting to write when you were in Afghanistan, or did you start writing when you came back?
Yeah, I didn't have enough confidence or people around me. When I kind of grasped the concept of songwriting, you know, I had a couple people at West Point. They were like, "Oh yeah, I was writing the song. I wrote this song or whatever." And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was like, why would you write a song? I was like, I'm just going to sing all these Garth Brooks songs that I know. I love these. These are fun. Yeah. You know?
These have already been written. Do it the easy way.
That was like my first instinct about that. I was like, come on, dude. Why would, I mean, it's not even, that song's not even good. Like, let me just sing, let me just sing Friends in Low Places. Like, that gets a lot better eyes out of people.
No, I'm going to buy a shirt.
Yeah, we can all sing it together. They all know it. They heard it on the radio. Anyway, but then when I graduated college and I knew I was coming to Nashville or for Fort Campbell, I literally went out and I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, I got to meet some people. And I bought some books too. I was like, Songwriting for Dummies. I was like, I'm going to figure it out somehow. So yeah, that was that. And then, I started coming down here and just shaking people's hands and trying. Of course, that's a little bit of a crapshoot too. You know, you're like, whose hand are you going to shake?
Yeah.
You know? So that's tough. You got to learn to be discerning and learn the people that you're talking to. Cause there are a lot of people and that everybody in Nashville is trying to network with somebody. So you got to be able to network defensively as well as offensively. Because you can spend a lot of time with people who are trying to network with you because they think it's the thing to do and you think it's the thing to do and you do it and neither one of you are helping each other at all. You know, nothing personal, no hard feelings. It's just like if both of you don't have the connections or the raw talent to get anywhere, but y'all are just networking every day, it's not, you're not, scratching each other's back is not going to get either one of you anywhere. So you got to be sure that you're networking up, and then for the people that are, you know, maybe you kind of graduate out of the talent class that you're in or the people that you have been networking with, like I said, it's nothing personal. It's not that you can't talk to them or be their friends anymore, but you definitely, they can, time is of the essence, and so they can definitely be a vampire on your time and just kind of just suck you dry if you let it happen. So you got to be sure that your ratio of who you hang out with is improving you. And that's the other big part of being in Nashville, right? Because a lot of people, they want to be in another town and be like, I got my cover band in Oklahoma City and we make this much money every day. And like that was things I was trying to do in Oklahoma City working for the oil company. I was like, I can just play on the weekends and I'll get good and I'll get a following or something, you know? And I find a producer down here and I found one in Texas, you know? I was like, and if I look back at that now, like 10 years ago or whenever that was, and like I still have some of those tracks like on my phone. I was like, bro, like what was I doing? Like I paid this dude to like produce this and he sold me on the fact that he's like, yeah, I got a studio, bro. I'll play all this stuff and like we'll make it work. And it was terrible, right? And so, but I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know how, but I knew it wasn't like, I was like, well, it's not Nashville, but you know, like we'll get there. It was terrible. I wasted my money. I could have taken that same money, came to Nashville and found some kid that's like, some kid in his dorm room that's at Belmont right now. And he could have knocked that out of the park. But those are things I didn't know at the time, you know? So that's all the more reason to just get here now. You know, somebody said, I heard a guy at the Bluebird say this one time, way back then, 10 years ago, and I never forgot it. He said, you know, if you want to climb mountains, you have to go where the mountains are. And so that was like, I think the biggest lesson that I learned and the thing that stuck with me is, you know, I wanted to climb the songwriting mountain and that mountain was in Nashville. So you got to go where that mountain is. And so I finally made it here. So
that's awesome. Well, I want to talk more.
We made it to base camp. Halfway to base camp now.
Before you leave, though, I want to talk about your creative arts writing experience because you went from serving in the military to getting out, pursuing music and writing. And then I poached you and I was like, hey, now I want you to help another veteran with your skills.
Sure.
So you've done multiple writes now, right? You went to Camp Southern Ground 2 with us.
Camp Southern Ground like maybe once or twice. And then we've done three or four other normal.
But what was that experience like from you being on the seat of, I've transitioned out of the military, I'm pursuing music and I can use my talent, and then hearing the stories and were there different perspectives? What was like from that first write? Because your first write was with Xavier.
Yeah,
Andrew,
with Xavier. Yeah. And Andy Albert. Yeah.
And, what was that like?
You know, that was cool for me. It felt pretty natural for me, because, you know, and the veteran that we were riding with that day, he was in tears within like 15, 20 minutes of walking in the room with him. And so you're three, four grown men in a room together, never met each other, you know. And in any other circumstance, that's probably, you're not going to get that deep in any other conversation in life. And so I think that that for me spoke volumes and saying, wow, the effect of what we can do in terms of creative edits, it's not that we're going to have, you know, necessarily that every song that comes out of here is going to be a commercial radio song or anything like that. It's not about that. It's about the fact that you can see that that guy is talking about things that he would not be comfortable talking about in any other environment or circumstance. But we have him in this room, three grown men in a safe place that he can talk and put those memories, good, bad, or indifferent, he can put them into song, put them into word. And maybe he's never been able to do that before until this day. And here we are doing it in 15 to 20 minutes. And so I think that that for me was, you know, I was completely sold at that point. I was like, man, this is huge. And I realized that that's what songwriting was for me as well. You know, being a veteran, I was like, all those years, that's why I shipped a guitar to myself in the middle of Afghanistan. That's why, you know, I had one under my bed when I was in at West Point and all those things, because that's what that music was for me. And I could see what it was in another veteran. And so, and I think that's why Creative Vets has such a bright future and has so much impact to have on thousands of veterans over the next, you know, several years. It's just going to grow and grow, and more veterans will be able to testify that their experience with Creative Vets was like none other. Like it's no other veteran experience than it is at Creative Vets, because we get deep, we address the issues in a very open and safe way. Like we don't sit them down on a couch with a psychologist and a clipboard and, you know, something that they've been through 1,000 times before probably.
And then give them pills afterwards.
And then, yeah, and then give them a bunch of pills to medicate. We put them in this environment and it's just unique and special. And so it's very impactful. And so I'm excited, as I have been the last 5 years, to see what the next 5 years are for Creative Vets. So,
heck yeah. Well, we appreciate you being a part of it, because having a veteran in the room is obviously, we pair every veteran with a veteran, mm-hmm. but that was three veterans in a room, which I think made it even more comfortable.
Yeah.
And especially with him, with all the stuff that he needed to say, I think it was a pretty huge impact.
Absolutely.
But let's leave on a high note and a fun note. And it's something I just came up with. I want to do some segments throughout this podcast, but I think now with all the military dudes, or ladies, I want to do like boot camp or Iraq funny stories, because everyone talks about like the horrible stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I want to talk about, because I mean, Brett knows, I used to tell him about all my story. I have so many great funny stories. Just to give you an example, one in Iraq, when after I was, you know, injured, blown up 4 times,
right.
I was unfit for duty. I had to be at the COC. So I went from being a grunt to pretty much being an admin, like front desk clerk at like whatever. So the S1 sergeant was like, hey, I have access to make us a 12-month calendar. For some reason, when I went to Iraq, I brought a tattoo sleeve,
yeah.
and I brought a mullet wig.
Oh, nice.
You know, the things that you need when
essentials.
You go fight in Iraq.
Yeah.
Don't know why I packed it. I mean, I do, because I'm, you know, I was like, I'm going
to
have
like
a good time.
I like to have
fun. Yeah, my name's Richard. I like to party. And so he told me, he's like, we should make a 12-month calendar and we'll give it to First Sergeant. And I was like, okay, sounds like a good idea. So I'm using my mullet wig. They have like a 6-wheeler out there. I'm doing like, you know, bite the lip, turn back, and take a photo of me with my mullet wig and my tattoo
yeah.
sleeve. We
yeah.
made a legit 12-month calendar. And I thought it was just going to be funny just to have it.
Yeah.
He gave it to the First Sergeant, like legit. And the First Sergeant put it on his desk, which
oh,
right
nice.
Across the desk is our captain.
Yeah.
And then one day a general comes in, like at yeah. Camp Fallujah, general walks in. One, so I'm just like, I, you know, general on deck, so whatever. And I walk out because
yeah.
the first thing he's going to see is a 12-month calendar of me like there. And I'm just out. I legitimately think,
I'm
going to be non-rank. I'm going to lose my rank. I'm going to lose pay. Like, oh my gosh. And he walks out. You know, he's in there for like 20 minutes. He walks out and he looks at me. He's like, are you Casper? I'm like, yes, General. He's like, he just shook his head and he walked away. I was like, woo.
Survive.
So is there any funny story, boot camp story or, you know, whatever, West Point story or military story that you have that's just kind of like hilarious that you like to tell?
Yeah, I guess the first one that comes to mind is so at West Point, right after high school in June, you graduate high school and then you start your basic training at West Point. So you go through like 12 weeks of basic training that summer before you start school and everything. Well, then I was on the football team. So we left basic training a week early to go to football camp. And so they extracted all the football players over, and we were sleeping on cots at the ice hockey rink, actually, next door to the football stadium. And so we went through football camp. And during football camp time, all the other cadets go back down the hill, they call it, is where all the barracks are and the main campus is. It's about half a mile away from the football stadium, maybe a mile. And they spend a week, what they call a reorgy week, a reorganization week, where they actually meet all the upperclassmen. They learn, they go to get their books, they get issued their computers, all their equipment, uniforms that they're going to need throughout freshman year. They meet their roommates, they get, you know, their bunk beds, they get everything cleaned and ready to go for the first week that the upperclassmen are back in the first week of school. Well, we didn't have that week. We were doing football camp. So all the football players, Sunday night before Monday morning, the first day of class at West Point, is the first time that we come back. They send us back from football camp back down to meet all the upperclassmen. We've got none of our books, our bunk beds aren't put together, our rooms aren't cleaned, and we just roll in and meet our classmates. And so that's a little awkward as it is. I meet my two classmates, or my two roommates that I'm going to be with. And I'm like, oh, what's up, guys? I think one of them was actually still in the hospital. He got like dysentery or something out from boot camp. Like half my class got dysentery, I think. It was like raining for the last week. Anyway, luckily we skipped out on that. Well, I find out, because as a freshman at West Point, you have a lot of duties. Like you have to like perform all these like daily tasks and things. Like you have to, before every morning breakfast formation, all the freshmen have to go out. You have to deliver laundry that's been like dry cleaning that's done. You have to deliver it to the upperclassmen or collect it from the upperclassmen and go put it all in the right place. You have to stand. One freshman stands under every clock on the entire floor of the building, and 5 minutes before every breakfast formation, they start yelling at the top of their lungs in unison, "Attention all cadets, there are 5 minutes until breakfast formation." You know, they're like quivering, their voices are all scared to death. They're like, "Louder, yell louder." So the upperclassmen, obviously, that's when all the hazing and stuff's happening really heavy, because the upperclassmen are still entertained by it, kind of, you know, it's fun. The first week they're back, they're not stressed out yet themselves, so they're just hammering all the freshmen. And so they've been around this for a week, learning to kind of like where you dodge, where you dip, where you keep your head down. I don't know where my room's at. I don't know what floor I'm on, anything. I just roll back in, and then they hand me a clipboard, and one of them goes, "Hey, you're in charge for in the morning to get everybody on the wall for minutes." And I'm like, I haven't met anybody, and I have a clipboard of names. So I like spend my whole first Sunday night there, like trying to like knock on the doors of all these freshmen and be like, "Oh, what's up, man? Hey, can you be out here on clock 7 at 6:37 in the morning?" Like I'm just like all nervous. I'm like, this is not gonna work. So the next morning, this is my first day. I haven't met any of these upperclassmen yet. Monday morning, everybody's just kind of tense. They're like, "Oh my God, we're all back. Here we go." So a couple of them start yelling. Well, I can't find like three of the people who are supposed to be on these clocks. And I know I'm in charge of it. And I'm going to get hammered my first day if I don't find these guys. So I'm like, look, I don't remember where they're at. So I'm like looking. I open a door. And I think it's where they're at. And I'm like, "Guys, get out here on the freaking wall. What are y'all doing?" Like I'm pissed at this point. I throw the door open. It's a senior's room. And their lights are still out. They were asleep. And they sit up in bed and they're like, "Who are you?" I was like, "Oh God, oh God." I go to shut the door, and the door handle comes off in my hand. And then I was like holding the door handle, just staring at them, bro. And there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears after that for me, and push-ups and whatnot in the hallway, and embarrassment after that. But I'll leave those details out. But it was a rough first day at West Point for me.
Those moments just really stick with you.
Door handle did me dirty. I was like, this couldn't be any worse. I'm holding their door handle. I'm like, I handed it to him. I was like, all right, I gotta go.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for that story, and thanks for being on our podcast.
Hey.
We appreciate you. We'll keep working with you. I know you do everything to support Creative Vets, so thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. Creative Vets is a big passion of mine. It has been for all these years, and will continue to be. So let me know what y'all need.
Well, that was an awesome episode. What do you think after hearing Luke talk about
his
experience?
Oh man, we love Luke, don't we? We're so glad to have him in our corner. So yeah,
it's good when you have someone that could. Some people are hard to talk to and interview with, but he's been doing it for so long too. I think he understands that, but his stuff still, just like I said in the beginning, his personality is very authentic, and I think you can hear that in the things he says. Was there anything that jumped out at you, anything the listeners need to maybe understand for those civilians out there listening or anybody that doesn't get the lingo?
Yeah, the lingo. This is an uphill battle for me. So what is SI? He mentioned that.
Did he say SI? Oh, S1?
S1.
Yeah. S1. So in the military, there's a bunch of different, and I don't even know all of them, but S1 is like an admin shop. So even when I was first, the first interaction, because I was infantry. And so in my head, I'm like, only infantry exists. And then I go in the Marine Corps and I'm like, oh, wait, there's support staff and there's these people and these people and these people. So S1 was admin shop. So a lot of this stuff, just filing, and they go to Iraq just like we do. They just stay on the base. So yeah, S1 is admin. Cool. For at least the Marine Corps.
You mentioned something that I never heard of before, UPSEA. What's that?
Yeah, UPSEA conference. We talked about that briefly. That was the first time I ever did a keynote, which kind of changed the way I did everything. It gave me the confidence to know that I could continue doing it. And I've actually made kind of a small career out of that, aside from Creative Vets, which has been awesome. But UPSEA is a leading association for professionals, continued and online education. So it's deans of all these different continued education and online learning systems from around the country. So when I spoke in Virginia, like VCU, Virginia Tech, Auburn, Alabama, all of them have UPSEA representatives from their school. I don't want to say it's a union, but it's kind of like that, where it's a lot of groups just have their groups. So they'll meet every year. And then when we went to the national one, I think they have 800 schools that are in the UPSEA conference. Yeah. Even my alma mater of the School of the RNCU of Chicago, they're a part of it. So
cool. Awesome. That was a good opportunity for you. And then lastly, just for those of us who are not in Nashville or not familiar with the Bluebird, Luke mentioned the Bluebird a couple times. Brett, you've got some experience with the Bluebird. What's the Bluebird Cafe?
So it's one of the most prestigious places as a songwriter to play. And it was on the TV show Nashville, so like everybody wants to come see it now, but they don't realize how small it
Super
is.
Super small.
So you're sitting around, like there's four songwriters sitting, and then there's people all around them, and songwriters play their songs, and I think that's where Garth Brooks actually got discovered.
What does it take to get to one of those rounds?
So I'm not 100% sure, but I think Monday nights, it's either Sunday or Monday, they have kind of like an open cattle call, like anybody can go try to play, and then like based on that, they might give you a night. Or if you have a certain publishing company, like if you've written a number one, you can probably just contact them and be like, hey, can I come play? Can I book around? I'll bring three other writers with me.
Yeah, fun fact, Mark Irwin, who was my first ever co-write, the guy who had, you know, Here in the Free World by what's his name? Why am I forgetting?
Alan Jackson.
It was Alan Jackson's first number one hit. He was a bartender at the Bluebird while his song went number one. Because again, most people don't know this, but songwriters don't get paid right away. They're not getting paid like artists. They get paid a lot less. But
it takes
everyone,
6 months to a year. Yeah, to get
or maybe
any
he
royalties.
Said. I think he said actually it was not until it got to like top 10 that he actually ended up quitting or something like that. But it's a place where a lot of people get their start. But I think it became more of a touristy place now that it was on the Nashville TV show.
Yeah.
So yeah, lines are super long, super tiny. It's hard. I've only been in there once. I've lived here like 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're visiting Nashville, plan ahead.
Sweet.
It's a cool place to see a show, though.
Was that it? I mean, that was pretty quick. I don't think there was anything else. If any other listeners heard something that they have questions about, though, they could always email us at info@creativevets.
Dot org.
Wait, info@creativevets.org. I'm like, wait, I forgot you need that for an actual email. So they could email us there if they have any additional questions about this episode, and we can actually pile it onto a further episode down the road.
Perfect.
Just catch
we'll
up
do
on
that.
Them. Awesome. Well, we're out of here.
Catch you next time.
Bye.